Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Go. Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
You do what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Good evening and welcome to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gildo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and our producer, Andre Champagne. Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy holidays. It's that time of year. This is the eve of Christmas Eve. Boy, as a kid, this was a tough day to get through, man. You couldn't wait for the next day. What was your favorite all-time Christmas present, Todd?
My favorite was a blue bike.
A blue bike?
That I got when I was 8 years old.
Awesome.
I begged for it, and I was told, like, you know, since Thanksgiving is when I started begging for it. And I was told by my parents and my grandparents that wasn't going to happen. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. And then on Christmas Eve, I can still see my grandfather in his green Chevy truck. He always had a Chevy truck, Super Chevy Studios. And it's true, but he really did. And he turns the corner, and you can see the bike in the bed.
Oh. You know,
and it was blue.
Nice.
And then I got on it. I was so excited. It was Christmas Eve, and it was almost dark, and I went for a ride. It was a 3-speed, and I went for a ride around the corner, and I was going fast, and I went through some gravel, and I just wiped out.
Oh, man.
Wiped out and hit my chin. Had to go to spend the night in the hospital.
Well, that's no problem. Did you scratch the bike?
Probably, but it wasn't bad, that, you know. But I had to spend the night in the hospital. Well, not the whole night, but I got stitches.
And, oh, well, that can be cool.
Had to breathe into the rubber glove. What was that about? Did you ever get stitches when you were a kid and have to breathe into the rubber glove?
No. You know, I never got stitches either. I guess I was much more well-coordinated and a better athlete
I'm sure that's what it was.
Andre, what was your favorite all-time Christmas present?
Well, I woke up one morning, and I remember there was just this big old basketball goal in my living room, and I was like, why is this huge thing there? But I mean, it was exciting because we got to put up that very day, and that's what I spent.
But it was an outdoor basketball goal that they just had in your house?
Right. But it wasn't set up. It was like all, like, it had the big box and stuff, you know, because it wasn't built yet. But
did that lead to like neighborhood one-on-one tournaments and stuff like that at your house?
No. But when the guys came over, yes. But because I live on a highway, there was no playing in the street, right? But it was fun. I mean, and y'all will be surprised because other people my age will say, oh, when I got my first phone or something. But no listeners, there's still hope out there.
So, well, my favorite was I got a complete football uniform, helmet, shoulder pads, the pants, the thigh pads. You remember those things?
Was it a Hutch uniform?
You know, I don't remember the brand name, but it was cool, man. I remember the shoulder pads were like white, real thick, and then the dude across the street from me, Dickie Lathrop, he got one too. You know, so we were out in the front yard all day, just hitting each other and stuff, man.
It was awesome. You evoked another memory. All right, so my mom, when I was about 8 years old, okay. She got me a full football uniform too.
Yeah.
And it was a Hutch uniform.
Okay.
And, you know, it was just a plastic helmet with.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. It wasn't too safe.
So,
man.
So I decide I want to try out for the River Oaks Bengals football team, which was the first year that they were going to have the team. And,
in Baton Rouge.
Yeah. And at River Oaks Elementary. And I'm actually too young to go out for the team, but I was convinced I could go out there. Well, my mom dressed me in that helmet.
Yeah.
To go out there, and it would twist around. It was so big, and it was thin. It was plastic. And so she sent me out there with like 100 guys trying out for the team before they, you know, cut anything. And here I am with the coat. Can you believe she did that to me?
How did you do?
I ended up making the team.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because of my helmet. That's for damn sure.
Well, call in with your favorite Christmas present if you're out there listening to Tiger Egg Radio.
But I'm sure nobody's listening anymore.
But we are going to get back to some football. We're going to go over the Lane Kiffin hire, and actually LSU has a game on Saturday, and we're going to talk about that, even though it's the most least talked about, the least talked about and least anticipated bowl game I can remember.
Have you ever seen a bowl game that LSU's played in, honestly, that nobody cares about?
Well, you know, that bowl game after Kelly was hired, that was similar, but that was still kind of new, you know, whereas now people are used to these games not meaning a lot when there's a coaching change, and even sometimes when there's not a coaching change, and you know, the coach is not, the new coach not coaching it, because, you know, they used to do that. But we're going to talk about what the new LSU offensive coaches did last week, and that was coach at Ole Miss, where they were last season. Chris Lowe from on3.com covered that game in Oxford. We're going to talk to him about that and the playoff system, which took a hit this past week with particularly the James Madison game, and a lot of people don't think Tulane should have been there either. And then at 7 p.m., we have a great guest, Caroline Fenton from Yahoo.com and SiriusXM Radio. She talked football and the LSU women's basketball team as well. And then at 7:30, Toilo T.J. Brown, who covers the men's basketball team, who got the hell scared out of them last night by Prairie View before pulling it out. But we have Chris at 6:30, and right now we're going to continue to discuss the Lane Kiffin hire, and we have a great edition of the next Tiger Rag magazine coming out the first week of January with Lane on the cover, and it's basically the Lane Kiffin issue, and we had a lot of fun putting that together.
It's like a collector's edition,
man. Yeah, I think it is. It will be. Anyway, let's get it started with Todd's thoughts on Lane coming in.
Well, I think, you know, we call it, everybody calls it the Lane train, you know, the Lane train coming in, and it was filled with coaches from Ole Miss on his offensive staff. Well, yesterday, all the coaching staff, Lane's coaching staff, became final, and he named them all, and, you know, they were announced, I should say. And you've got to, you know, with all the energy and all of the excitement that he's brought to the LSU football program since he was announced and introduced as the head coach on December 1st. When you pair this coaching staff, which is so important to have a good coaching staff, it's one of the most important things a head coach does is build a coaching staff. And you pair that with what he did with the early signing period, which had screw up the terminology all the time, but it was the number one composite ranked class
per capita.
It was
the number one per capita because they only signed 14, but they're all really highly ranked. And based on just that 14 is the number one class.
Yeah, so if you took the average score,
yeah,
on an A to F scale, they were the highest ranked.
Right. Quality over quantity.
Quality over quantity. So you pair that with what he's done with his staff, and you can't help but be further excited, especially now that you know that this staff, along with Glasscock, who's his general manager, and I forgot his first name.
Billy
Glasscock. They have completely evaluated LSU's roster. They have their big board up. They know exactly who they want out of the portal. Now, we don't know who that is, but we know that they've got this. And they've completely built out who they want from LSU's pass roster, who they want to continue to recruit for the late signing period in February, and who they want out of the transfer portal. And they've got the staff. And this staff is impressive as heck.
Yeah, and you know, really what hurt Ed Orgeron in the end was his coaching hires. His assistant coaching hires really just killed him. And really Kelly, too. You know, the Joe Sloan hire ended up not being good. The Matt House hire looked good on paper when that happened, but he was a tremendous failure. Now he replaced him well with Blake Baker, but you know, he never did have a good offense after Jaden Daniels left and after Mike Denbrock left. And yeah, it's easy to coach a great quarterback like Bill Walsh did with Joe Montana and Denbrock with Jaden Daniels, but I would have liked to seen Denbrock or somebody like him with Nussmeier. So that really hurt him. So yeah, and Lane has a track record of hiring excellent assistants, particularly on the defensive side, because he kind of runs the offense. But he's picked some good ones on offense too. You know, the offensive coordinator,
Charlie Weiss Jr. Charlie
Weiss Jr. My mind went blank. You know, he's been under Kiffin since he was at Florida.
He actually worked with him at Alabama.
Oh, really?
When they were on Saban's staff at Alabama.
He was like a student assistant or a graduate assistant.
An analyst.
Yeah. So he's kind of built him, you know, and he's become a good coach. So, yeah, that's a good point. Well, let's go over the staff real quick. The special teams coordinator. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Special teams.
Special teams coordinator Joe Houston. He was like the most recent hire. That just happened yesterday. He was at Florida for a couple of years, coached at Alabama under Saban, also coached under Bill Belichick at New England. And then they got Sterling Lucas from South Carolina to be their defensive line coach, although he was more of an ends coach at South Carolina. So it's going to be interesting to see with what they do there, because they have Coach Peoples who is being retained, and he's kind of an edge coach. He has coached the defensive line in the past, so we'll see what happens there. And then Lane's little brother, Chris Kiffin, linebacker coach and co-defensive coordinator. He coached linebackers this past season at Ole Miss. The year before that, he was just an analyst. But he did coach the defensive line and linebackers at three NFL teams over 6 years. He was a defensive coordinator for Lane at Florida Atlantic as well. And, you know, they're retaining Corey Raymond and Jake Olson as well, in addition to Blake Baker. And then the other guys they brought in were the Ole Miss offensive assistants.
Well, wait, go back on defense real quick, because you mentioned Corey Raymond and Kevin Peoples and Jake Olson being retained, but he's also bringing in Lou Spanos.
Right.
And that was announced today, or yesterday, I should say.
Yesterday.
But it was one that kind of slid under the radar. He's an assistant defensive line pass rush specialist, and he's followed from Ole Miss, where he was a defensive analyst.
Well, he's been here though. He was grouped with the other guys when they came in on the 30th.
Well, he's got 17 years of NFL experience, and when you look at it, this is what's interesting. You've got Kevin Peoples, who's an edge rushers coach. You've got Lou Spanos, who is a pass rush specialist, and then you have, like you mentioned, with Sterling Lucas, who's probably going to bring Dylan Stewart from South Carolina in a transfer portal, is what I'm hearing. And Dylan Stewart was the best defensive end in the country this past year. So that defensive staff has been just enhanced. And as you mentioned, it was solid already. And then, of course, the offensive hires are primarily Ole Misses.
Right. And they just got Kevin Smith, who was rumored to be here early on, but he actually coached Ole Miss Saturday night and then was replaced by Frank Wilson last week, who's still going to coach LSU in the bowl. But Kevin Smith is in. There was some worry that he might not come in.
And in addition to being the running backs coach, Kevin Smith is also the associate head coach.
Right, and he's a big-time recruiter, and he may bring Kawan Lacey with him. That would be great, and especially if they get Trinidad Chambliss too. So that would be awesome. But we'll be back more to talk about the Lane Kiffin's new staff and more about Lane and the Tigers right after this on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious
with multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Merry Christmas to you. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn, and our producer and writer and radio man, Andre Champagne, has breaking news.
So Todd just talked about it right before the break about Sterling Lucas, the new LSU defensive line coach coming from South Carolina. We weren't sure that Dylan Stewart, that star defensive end for South Carolina, was going to follow him, and he announced on social media about just 30 minutes ago that he will be staying at South Carolina with the Gamecocks next season. So
will Lucas still be coming?
Lucas will still be gone, yes.
But he didn't bring the guy he was supposed to.
Right, right.
But he's still going to stay. Okay.
Yes.
You know that's cool. You know what that means? That means they showed him the money at South Carolina.
That is there exactly what that there means. And it could be the same exact thing with Kewan Lacy, as there's been reports that they're offering him almost up to $2 million in NIL. So that's insane.
He'd be a great running back to get at LSU. If he came along with Kevin Smith, and you know, I mean, how you got to think LSU's got a great chance of getting him and Trinidad, if Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback, gets the NCAA waiver, because I mean the whole offensive staff, like we said, Charlie Weiss, the offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, Kevin Smith, the running backs coach, Joe Cox, tight ends coach and co-offensive coordinator, George McDonald, wide receivers coach, pass game coordinator. And this tells you a little bit about, Todd was just talking about this, how intricate their passing game can be. They also have an assistant, Sawyer Jordan, who just works with inside receivers. And then Dane Stevens is going to be the quarterback's coach along with Weiss. And, boy, that offense, I know it was against Tulane, but that offense really looked good on Saturday.
And the only person that we've left out is Eric Walford, who's the offensive line. He's the veteran. He's the actual SEC O-line coach hired from Kentucky.
Yeah.
That didn't give me the
– But he was at Alabama. He had some high rankings in the rushing offense at Alabama, and he's only been an offensive line coach his whole career, and he was at another Southeastern Conference play. So he's an SEC veteran. To me, that was one of the more impressive hires that he made. And you know Saban probably recommended him to Lane because of his time with Nick there. I bet you any money.
What do you think about all these co-offensive and co-defensive titles?
Now, a lot of that are just titles. Like somebody asked me, I was on a radio show last night, and they said, oh, well, do you think Blake Baker is going to be upset that Chris Kiffin is coming in as the co-defensive coordinator? No, it's just a title. There's always one guy who's the real coordinator, you know, because you can't have that many cooks in there. But it's like associate head coach. I mean, come on. Frank Wilson was not really having any head coaching duties while Kelly was the coach. Maybe he should have, but he became the interim. It's just a title for them to put on their resume and maybe get more money and then help them get future jobs, I think.
You know what it was? What's interesting, while you were saying that, I was thinking, okay, I'll buy that co-defensive and co-offensive coordinator thing. I agree with you. I'll buy that. But one of the things that I think is going to be really different for Blake Baker is he's not going to be coaching linebackers anymore. And he's always coached the linebackers.
I bet you still kind of got his hand in it, though.
No, I'm sure he does. He's
maybe
evolved.
That's a good thing, though. Maybe that's a good thing. He can focus more on the defense, you know.
Right. I think that's a good thing, too.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's the first time since he's been – he was at LSU before he left to go to Miami and then to Missouri, where he was the defensive coordinator, and then he comes back and he coached linebackers before he left LSU, and then when he came back, he's coached, and this will be the first time he's not coaching linebackers. I wonder if he'll still wear cleats to practice.
And I think he will, and he'll probably still wear that LSU baseball hat too.
Yeah, and that gold sweatshirt.
Well, I think you know, I think he's excited to keep Jake Olson and Corey Raymond and Peoples back. You know, so it's you know, there's really, when you look at it, I mean, they're all these guys, if they don't have experience in the SEC, they have experience in the NFL, and some of them both. You know, they're not getting some guys from lower level leagues. You know, they may have coached there early in their career, but these guys are very, very experienced. Looks like a very impressive staff.
And they all have ties to Kiffin.
Well, somewhat. I don't think Wallerford does, the offensive line coach. I know, he at Alabama? Well, maybe he was at Alabama.
I meant the offensive side, except for him. You're right.
Yeah. But, you know,
does Chris Kiffin have any ties to Lane Kiffin?
it's very connected. It's all very connected. But you know, it's gonna. I still think they need players, man. I mean, you know, he's really got to do a lot in the portal. But you know, I think after this year, because of LSU's recruiting base, I think he's gonna gradually be less and less portal oriented. Do you think that?
I think
numbers wise.
No, you know what I think? I think that it depends upon the year. And yeah, I think it depends upon how good the recruiting class is. I don't think he's going to get recruits just to get recruits and say he has a good recruiting class. I think they're going to evaluate that roster every year and build it the way they want to. And if they've got a great defensive lineman from Louisiana, a five-star like they had this year, and they want to bring him in and pay him the split of the salary, great. If not, they'll get one out of the portal. I think that's the mentality.
Okay, we will be back with Chris Lowe of On3.com right after this on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. While I'm a fourth generation rice and soybean grower, you don't have to be a farmer to be a Louisiana Farm Bureau member. Membership has its benefits, from discounts on car seats, hotel rooms, and rental cars, to access to insurance you can count on to be there when you need, plus a whole lot more. We're 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Happy holidays. Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor, with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag executive editor, and Andre Champagne, producer, versatile journalist of both electronic media and print media. And we're joined by another great journalist, Chris Lowe from On3.com. Chris was at the Ole Miss destruction of Tulane over the weekend with all those LSU coaches and maybe future LSU players. Chris, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you guys, Glenn. It's always good to be with you, buddy.
Thank you. And remember my address when you mail me those expensive cigars this Christmas. Appreciate it. I can almost smell them coming in. No Dutch Masters, no Swisher Sweets, no Have a Tampas.
Chris, I'm noticing a trend here. He keeps at reminding you about the cigars. He's reminding me about the whiskey constantly that he wants. I think he's telling us something about his lifestyle.
Yeah, he's been smoking cigars since he was 11. I think he's drinking whiskey since he was 13.
Hey, that reminds me. One of the greatest quotes ever by a football coach was by Curly Hallman, who was the LSU coach. And I forget the context of it, but one day he said, "I quit smoking when I was 7. Okay, Curly. Well, that's good, man. Made a health choice at 7. Curly Hallman, the man. Well, Chris, what did you think of that atmosphere in Oxford, man? It looked like something else on the television, man. What was it like being there?
Yeah, it was great, and I think it was one of those things that everything just sort of lined up. It's the first time they've ever played a playoff game there. It's a historic season for Ole Miss. They won more games than they've ever won. I think the whole thing with Kiffin, you know, bailing and not being there was a big part of it, because fans obviously want, hey, would they want to be there and say we won, you know, without Kiffin being here? And I think that was a big part of it. So a lot of pride there inside that Ole Miss program and fan base to be able to do this when, I mean, gosh, two of us have covered SEC football forever. If you'd have told me 10 years ago, 15 years, or heck, 20 years ago, that Ole Miss would win 12 games and then a playoff, I wouldn't have believed it. So it was cool. And it was one of those things where they started so fast, Glenn, that you knew pretty much, you know, after those first two drives that Tulane was going to have a hard time competing.
You know, and Ole Miss plays Georgia now in the second round quarterfinal at the Superdome in the Sugar Bowl. And Ole Miss was leading Georgia in the regular season going into the fourth quarter, and they got beat
at Georgia.
At Georgia, and got beat 16-0 in the fourth quarter. That was a weird thing. What do you think happened in that game, and what do you think are Ole Miss's chances in the Sugar Bowl?
Yeah, I was actually at that game too, and you know, Georgia did not punt, Glenn, a single time in that football game. They never punted. And it was like a hockey game, man. Both teams are up and down the field. And you're right, Ole Miss was able to match them score for score. And I would say
it was more like a basketball game than a hockey game.
Well, basketball, dude. Hockey. Okay. I'm thinking fast.
I know you're so Northeastern, but go ahead.
That's true. You're not educated enough to talk about hockey, but we'll save that for another day. But
nor am I interested enough, but go ahead.
But they just couldn't, you know, they could not get off the field. Ole Miss couldn't. And what happened is Georgia's defense was able to get some pressure on Chambliss in the fourth quarter and finally stopped him. And once they did that, Stetson Bennett, I'm still stuck a few years ago, Gunnar Stockton was able to really make a lot of big plays. Georgia ran the football better in the fourth quarter. But that was a close football game. And if Ole Miss could have made one stop, you just sort of, as that game sort of played out in the fourth quarter, you just felt like if they could have made one stop, that they had a chance to win that game. And granted, it was in Georgia. It was a tough environment, hostile environment. So I think, you know, beating a team twice, man, as you know, you go back through the annals of the SEC, it doesn't happen a whole lot. Yeah, when teams play twice.
You know, Chris, I agree that it's very difficult to beat a team twice, like you just said, and that it hasn't happened often in the SEC. But when I look at that game and I look what's happened since that game, I just think Georgia has significantly improved. And I think they're more like a typical Georgia team now, a Kirby Smart-coached Georgia team. And I think Ole Miss is going to have a little, you know, they're certainly not going to be able to run through Georgia like they did Tulane. And so I wonder if playing Tulane, a group of five team, in that first playoff kind of hurt their chances against Georgia a little bit. What do you think about that?
Well, I think Georgia's like to play. I mean, you want to get healthy, and Georgia's right, having the time off, you know, but you go back to last year, you know, Georgia beat Texas in a tough Sugar Bowl, won the SEC title, were off. And now there were some extenuating circumstances. Kirby's father fell there in New Orleans and later tragically died. And, you know, that was heavy on his mind. But Georgia didn't play well at all against Notre Dame. Scored 10 points and lost there after having the week off. So I think it can work both ways. To me, it all gets down to who does the best job of protecting the quarterback and who plays best up front in the offensive line. I think where Georgia, to your point, has improved the most is they played much better defense the last 3-4 weeks of the season. And you're right, have looked more like a Kirby Smart coached defense. They did not play very well most of this year on defense. They were erratic. They gave up big plays. And that's not what we're used to seeing from his defenses. But, yes, they've improved a lot. They've run the ball. I tell you what they've been is they've been balanced. on offense. Mike Bobo, to me, has been as underrated a coordinator as there is, with his ability to come in with Stockton in his first year as a starter. They've thrown the ball well. They've run the ball well. They've been a tough team, a much tougher team to defend. Ole Miss will have to play probably its best game to win. I'll say this. I don't think the kids on this team, though, are intimidated by Georgia, because think about it. A lot of the guys that were there last year when they beat Georgia by 3 touchdowns are still around. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Right.
And then this year, that game could have gone either way. It was up and down, back and forth. So I don't think they walk into this game in a neutral field, New Orleans, and think, we can't beat Georgia.
Well, and you know, Ole Miss is obviously a very mature team, especially in their attitude, especially having to endure everything they went through and with Kiffin's departure and when it occurred. But I was curious what your thoughts are on the fact that right after the first playoff win in Oxford against Tulane last week, their offensive staff is showing up, you know, as LSU's offensive staff, and they leave the team at Ole Miss and come back to Baton Rouge. How are they managing that, and what's the psychology behind all that?
Well, it can't be easy for the players. And I think, as we've all talked about this and reported on it and written stories, I think probably what gets lost is, how has this impacted the players? Because you know this is unlike anything they've ever been through before. The crazy thing is, the staff, you know, Lane had them back first thing the next morning, and they flew back the next day.
Yeah, and the players are probably off anyway, so I don't know how much it affects them.
Well, I think though it's more the emotional, the optics of it. You just win your first ever playoff game, and your coaches are gone, and you're back.
Right.
Hey, I give the players credit, though, guys. They played well, and they certainly did not look like a distracted football team.
Hey, Chris, we wanted to talk to you also about teams like James Madison and Tulane getting into the playoff, and if that should happen. Can you stay with us through the break and we can touch on that?
Yeah, just make sure I get the extra holiday pay, then I'll be glad.
Okay, and during the break, you can go through some cigar catalogs to pick out the best cigar for me. All right, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio. And hey, you can listen to this Tiger Rag episode on your wherever you listen to podcasts. It'll be on shortly after the show ends on TigerRagRadio.com and on YouTube. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio and Chris Lowe from On3.com right after this.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag Executive Editor, and Andre Champagne. What happened there?
My phone just started going off.
Okay. Super Chevy Dealer Studio, and we're rejoined by Chris Lowe from On3.com. Chris, let me read you some television ratings from the weekend. Alabama, Oklahoma, which was Friday night game, primetime, 14.9 million. Texas A&M, Miami, Saturday early afternoon game, 14.8 million. Ole Miss and Tulane in that 2:15 p.m. slot on Saturday dropped to 6.2 million. And Oregon and James Madison in primetime on Saturday night, 6.2 million. Do you think Tulane and James Madison should have been in the playoffs?
Under the current system, yeah. I mean, the system is what it is, and I think people, media, everybody has complained about it. But, you know, it's not Tulane's fault. It's not James Madison's fault.
But let me rephrase the question.
Well,
yeah.
I know you're right now. Yeah, but what needs to be changed is the system.
Glenn. Right,
And I do think we're going to expand the playoff at some point. I think we'll go to 16. There's too much money they're leaving on the table not to do that. So maybe there's a way to start the season earlier, or there's a play-in game. Maybe you have the top two ranked teams. Let's say you go to 16 teams, okay? You have the top two ranked group of five teams. Play some type of play-in game. You still have byes built in. But on that week, instead of getting a bye, they're playing in a play-in game. And the winner, so you're still involving two group of five teams, but only one of them gets in the playoffs. I mean, that doesn't bother me. The inclusivity piece of the playoff, I think, is what set people off. do we want to have the best 12 teams, or do we want to have the 12 teams that fit into the current system? So don't tell me, and I agree with you here, that it's the 12 best teams playing, because it's not. It's the 12 best teams that they can say, okay, this fits in what we have come up with a system to determine the national champion.
But Chris, I agree with what you're saying, but if it expands to 16, or if it stays at 12, but let's say it expands to 16, and you still make that play-in provision for a group of five team, what if that winner of that group of five play-in game still isn't one of the top 15 or 12 or 16 teams?
And I think there's a way to tweak it, I guess. I mean, that's why that, you know, Greg Sankey and all those folks make all the big money. Maybe you have a provision that says to be allowed to get in the playoffs, you have to finish in the top 12 of the rankings, or the top 15 of the playoff committee rankings. I don't know. I mean, I'm all for doing what we can to get the best teams in it. And our dear friend Glenn Roy Kramer, who we lost 2 or 3 weeks ago, used to always tell me, of course, Roy was the godfather of the BCS, the former SEC commissioner. And I remember talking to Roy a year or so ago at his home there at a retirement community and on the banks of the Tennessee River. And he was sort of chuckling and saying, well, they're still having a little controversy, aren't they, how they determine the national champion. He said, Chris, it's never going to be apples to apples in college football or oranges to oranges, because conferences are different. Schedules are different. Schedules even within the conference are different. I mean, think about it. Before Alabama and Georgia started playing in the SEC title game every year, they rarely met in the regular season. I don't think Georgia has ever played at Texas A&M. And A&M joined the conference in 2012. So it's just hard when you start comparing all these teams and schedules and conferences, everything's different. So I don't know what the perfect system is. But it certainly will be tweaked, just like it was tweaked last year. Right. I mean, last year you had that silly rule where the top four seeds were all the conference champions. They get away with that. I think we'll see something else done this year to figure out a way to get, whether it's expanding the playoff, to have a threshold where a group of five team has to finish ranked so high. But unless you're just going to go to a different division and create like a third division like you have FCS now, it's hard to explain to all the group of five teams, you're going to play all year long, but you're really not playing for anything. You're just going to play to get in bowl games. And I don't think that's really what anybody in college football necessarily wants.
Chris, when you look at the, speaking of schedules, you look at the SEC schedules and, you know, expanding to 9 games next year. Do you think that Lane has a chance with LSU's resources and his portal management can actually turn this LSU program into a playoff team in 1 year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be harder. It would be harder for anybody, not just Lane, because he comes in, as you point out, during a transitional time when it's just going to be harder, period, in the SEC to have a good team. You know, it's 8 more losses across the board. I was with Kirby Smart last week, and he was talking about it. He says, listen, he said, people are going to have to reprogram their minds in this league. Fans, donors, ADs, presidents. There are going to be a lot of good, really good 9-3 football teams walking around next year. And your question is, will the committee reward a 9-3 team? I don't know. But, no, I think Lane is a good enough evaluator of talent. I think he connects with the kids. I think they will mine that portal pretty hard. I do think they'll bring in players, probably from Ole Miss. And I think he's got a chance to turn it pretty quickly. But it's going to be harder playing 9 league games. It really will be.
Hey, Chris, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. And we'll see you at the Sugar Bowl. And have a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you.
All right, you're buying dinner at Drago's.
Yes, yes. Tiger Rag will be buying dinner at Drago's. So actually, Todd Horn will be buying dinner at Drago's.
See you guys.
All right, bye. Thank you. All right, guys, you can listen to this whole episode on at the what am I trying to say, Todd?
Wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcast.
They're on any platform. They're also going to be available on YouTube.
And shortly after the show, they'll be available on the TigerRag.com website. More after this.
I'm Richard Funtno, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.
For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio Christmas Edition. Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, here with Todd Horn, Executive Editor, and Andre Champagne, our producer, writer, and radio man on Louisiana Network.
Jack of all trades.
Yes, yes. And you can want to thank Chris Loeb for joining us for two segments there. I always enjoy Chris, his knowledge of the SEC. And you can listen to the whole show on Tiger Rag website right after the show, or at your favorite place to get podcasts on YouTube. You can listen to the whole show. We're going to have Caroline Fenton coming up at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. She's from Yahoo and Sirius XM Radio. We're going to talk about Lane Kiffin, women's basketball, Brian Kelly. And she's going to have a special Christmas gift for you listeners. But interesting news over the weekend with Joe Burrow having a heck of a game against Miami, the former LSU Heisman Trophy and national champion quarterback, after kind of talking about how he his will to play and desire to play among so many injuries. But, boy, he really went out and turned it on. And Todd Horn had a great story that's coming out in the next Tiger Rag magazine, and it's on our website, comparing Joe Burrow's career arc and injury situations with Burr Jones.
It's pretty amazing how eerily similar that career arc is. And I don't want to spoil it for you. You can go to TigerRag.com and just do a search on Joe Burrow if it's still not on the homepage. Or like Glenn said, you can catch Tiger Rag Magazine when it comes out the first part of January. It's in there too, but it's eerily similar. I mean, the same trajectory across the board.
Yeah, well, Burt Jones never made a Super Bowl, but he got close a couple of times, had some great statistical seasons, MVP seasons, and Joe Burrow made a Super Bowl, didn't win it, and has had great statistical years. And just, you know, at times, Burt Jones was the best quarterback in the NFL throughout much of his career, and Joe Burrow, same thing.
You know, it's interesting, too. Burrow rebounded his worst game of his career a week ago against the Ravens, lost 24-0. It's the only time he's been shut out in his pro career. And afterwards, he continued that almost sounded like a eulogy on his career. He really worried about his mental capabilities. And then he responds this week at Miami with a tremendous game. And I think Cincinnati won 45-20. They blew him out. And, of course, it was a typical Joe Burrow game where he threw like three touchdown passes, passed for 300-something yards, had like a 70% completion rate. But he also became the fifth fastest quarterback in NFL history to surpass the 20,000-yard passing mark.
He looked like Dan Marino in that game.
And you know what he said? You know what he said after the game? They asked him about the 20,000, and he goes, "Yeah, well, if I wouldn't have been hurt so much and been out, I'd have hit, have a lot more than that right now."
Yeah, you could see his frustration in that interview, but he definitely shows he can still do it. And you know, I think what Joe Burrow needs is a new team. I mean, nothing against Cincinnati, but just a change of scenery can really turn around a player's career. You know, you see it happen in Major League Baseball, the NBA, and maybe that'll happen for Joe. I'd like to see him playing for the Saints, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Actually, Tyler Shaw is playing really well.
Shuck. His name is Shuck.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You said Shuck.
Well, no, the radio went off.
Oh.
All right, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Caroline Fenton from Yahoo Sports and Sirius XM Radio. Remember, you can listen to this whole show wherever you listen to podcasts, on YouTube or right after the show on TigerRag.com. Here live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.